tweet at TodaySOR.
250 years ago today, William Wordsworth, one of the best known and best loved poets, was born in Cumberland in England's Lake District. We know that he once saw 10,000 daffodils, or so he claimed, and they featured in his most famous poem. We also know now that more than ever that in these strange times, poetry can bring us great comfort. So to explore what Wordsworth has to offer to everyone, including this year's Leaving Cert students, I'm joined in studio by Niall McMonagall. Niall, good to have you in studio. Good morning to you again. Take us back to the 7th of April, 1770, when William Wordsworth was born.
He was the second of five children. His parents were young. Father was 29, mother was 23 when Wordsworth was born. They were well off. His father worked as a law agent, and a house came with a job. And his childhood was happy and free. In his poem, The Prelude, Sean, written when he was 29, Wordsworth remembered his early boyhood when he played on the banks of the River Derwent. And he says, "I, a 4 years child, a naked boy among the silent pools, made one long bathing of a summer's day." And there's another line in the same poem where he says he was a naked savage in the thunder shower.
Not too much by way of swimwear by the sound of it. It certainly sounds free and easy. What about his schooling, Niall?
He attended a primary school where Mary Hutchinson, the woman he married years later, was also a pupil. And in Cockermouth, he attended the grammar school. And there his very first biography, Wordsworth's nephew, Christopher, tells us it was there that Wordsworth learned long poems by heart.
And would that have meant, Niall, that he saw himself, or he would have been a poet in the making?
Oh, I think so, yes. I mean, he read Shakespeare, Milton, Spenser. And in his own poetry, the place he grew up in became more and more important. But a great sorrow occurred early on. When Wordsworth was 8, his mother died of pneumonia. When Wordsworth was 13, his father died. And the five children were separated. They were looked after by different relatives. And his sister Dorothy, for example, who was 6 at the time, Wordsworth was 8, he didn't see her again for 9 years.
God heavens, tough times indeed. But where he grew up was quite beautiful, wasn't it?
Oh, and it was a great consolation. When he said that heaven lies about us in our infancy, he knew it and he meant it. And it's no exaggeration to say that Mother Nature replaced his parents in terms of a nurturing moral and guiding presence. Nature really became his nurse and his teacher.
He was orphaned at 13, as you say. So how were his teenage years?
Well, between 9 and 17, he and his brother Richard went to the grammar school at Hawkshead near Lake Windermere, and he boarded with a local family. He was very happy there. At Hawkshead, Wordsworth also met ordinary people of the district, farm workers, shepherds, blacksmiths, cobblers, carpenters, shopkeepers, and the ferrymen on Lake Windermere. And such characters later featured in his poems.
And did he do much roaming of the countryside as
well? Oh, he loved the Esthwaite Valley. He loved fishing, discovering birds' nests, skating, and he loved gathering nuts. I was an impassioned nutter, was how he put it.
But all the time continuing to read.
Oh, voraciously. He read all of Fielding from his father's library, Don Quixote, Gulliver's Travels, history, biography, poetry, poetry, poetry. And he carved his name on the school desk and is still visible today.
So when did he begin to write poetry?
Well, he wrote a poem about the setting sun when he was 14. He also wrote a poem to celebrate his school centenary. And as a 17-year-old schoolboy, he saw a poem of his in print for the first time.
And, of course, he went to university?
He did, yes. Spent 5 years at St. John's College, Cambridge. He disliked competitive exams, spent more time socialising than studying, and he ended up with a pass degree. But while there, he did study moral philosophy, Italian, English poetry, Euclid, Newton, and he translated the classics.
And he managed to get around Europe quite a bit as well,
oh,
didn't he?
Incredibly. I mean, he was remarkable. At 20, he went with a friend through France and Switzerland, covering 3,000 miles. 2,000 miles on foot. They had a budget of 20 quid and they only spent 12. And Wordsworth said of France that it was a nation mad with joy. It was celebrating the first anniversary of the storming of the Bastille. And when he crossed the awe-inspiring Alps, he said that he did not think of man or a single created being. My whole soul was turned to him who produced this terrible majesty before me.
Was he religious, Niall?
Not in a church-going way until late in life, but he saw God in nature, and he tells us that he saw in the light of setting suns, the round ocean and the living air, and the blue sky and in the mind of man, a motion and a spirit that impels all thinking things, all objects of all thought, and rolls through all things.
And after the 5 years that he spent in Cambridge, what did he do with himself?
Well, the guardians and relatives hoped he'd opt for a career in law or the church, but Wordsworth wasn't interested. Immediately after Cambridge, he lived in London for a few months, where he attended debates in the House of Commons. And that and revolutionary France made him more politically aware, so much so that he returned to France to assess for himself the effects of the 1789 revolution.
So he wanted something more exciting maybe than life as a lawyer or a clergyman.
Yes, and he got it. And the excitement included his meeting with Annette Vallon, a Catholic and 4 years older than Wordsworth. She became pregnant. She hoped he would marry her. But in letters home, he never once mentions Annette. And by the time their daughter Caroline was born in Orléans in December 1722, the 22-year-old dad, Wordsworth, had left for Paris and then for England.
Gosh, they didn't quite tell us all about that when we were studying Tintern Abbey, did they?
Well, it wasn't exactly hidden, but it wasn't really spoken about. But before, to be fair to Wordsworth, before he married Mary Hutchinson, years later, he went with his sister Dorothy back to France to meet Annette and Caroline to put supporting financial arrangements in place. He was then 32. They met in Calais, and that journey, Sean, from England to France, gave us two magnificent sonnets, one inspired by London in the early morning upon Westminster Bridge, which he said he wrote on the roof of a coach on his way to France, and another inspired by his evening walks with his daughter on the beach at Calais, the sonnet, "It is a beauteous evening, calm and free," and it's a beautiful poem addressed to his 9-year-old.
Now, in the Westminster Bridge poem, it's very early and London is empty. In fact, like we're seeing it now on TV. It's something that you wanted to recite for us.
That's right, yeah. I mean, it's a glorious poem composed upon Westminster Bridge. Earth has not anything to show more fair. Dull would he be of soul who could pass by a sight so touching in its majesty. This city now doth, like a garment, wear the beauty of the morning, silent, bare, ships, towers, domes, theatres and temples lie, open unto the fields and to the sky, all bright and glittering in the smokeless air. Never did sun more beautifully steep in his first splendour, valley, rock or hill. Ne'er saw I, never felt, a calm so deep. The river glideth at his own sweet will. Dear God, the very houses seem asleep, and all that mighty heart is lying still.
So contemporary, so relevant to the days we're in. The very houses seem asleep, certainly the very houses of Parliament. Now, certainly a poem to calm you down, and he wrote it on the coach on his way to France. That's impressive.
In fact, many of Wordsworth's poems were composed outdoors, and the most amazing example of all, Sean, is Tintern Abbey. Wordsworth was 28. He was revisiting a place he loved. It was the 13th of July, 1798, and he said that no poem of mine was composed under circumstances more pleasant to me to remember than this. I began it upon leaving Tintern after crossing the Wye and concluded it as I was entering Bristol in the evening. Not a line of it was altered, and not any part of it was altered, and not any part of it written down till I reached Bristol.
And he's only 28. That's incredible. From Tintern to Bristol, how long was that?
22 miles. And he thought nothing of going for long walks, and he could compose in his head while he marched along.
And in your view, Niall McMonagall, of great experience, is Tintern Abbey Wordsworth's greatest poem?
Oh, I would say so. I mean, the prelude, his longest, is a wonderful autobiographical poem. It's subtitled The Growth of a Poet's Mind, and it runs to almost 8,000 lines. But everything you need to know about Wordsworth is in Tintern Abbey. It's 159 lines long. It's like a beautifully structured symphony. It celebrates nature, man's creative mind, and our relationship with nature. It acknowledges the mystery of our being alive. It's realistic in the way it speaks of lives lived in lonely rooms and mid the din of towns and cities. He speaks of the heavy and the weary weight of all this unintelligible world. He knows that we die, but he reminds us with a passionate intensity that nature comforts, consoles, nourishes. He believed that nature never did betray the heart that loved her. And in another poem he says, "My heart leaps up when I behold a rainbow in the sky." Everyone can identify with that sensation.
And if you were to sum up William Wordsworth's achievement or achievements, what would it be?
Well, I think his poetry opened up whole new worlds to readers of poetry. Obviously, the great outdoors. But his poems celebrate and honour ordinary people and what he calls the goings-on of earth and sky. The language he used was different, less ornate from previous poets. He said he wanted to write in the language of ordinary men and women, and he wanted to show in his poems that men who do not wear fine clothes can feel deeply. And he said, look, a man, a poet is a man speaking to men.
So what was poetry like immediately before William Wordsworth then?
Well, the Augustan age, you know, it focused on society. The city was written in rhyming couplets. Everything was neat and ordered. The difference could be summed up as follows. Dr. Johnson believed that the man who is tired of London is tired of life, whereas for Wordsworth, high mountains are a feeling, the hum of cities torture.
Yeah.
It's a bit simplistic, I know. You know, in the Augustan age, people wore wigs and elaborate clothes. They loved the city. Romantic poets loved wild, rugged nature. And he believed, Wordsworth, that in nature we discover our own nature.
So overall then, what kind of a life did he have? He obviously was born into pretty good circumstances.
Good circumstances. And his 20s were spent in different places close to nature. Wordsworth and his sister Dorothy were inseparable. They lived in Somerset in different spots. For a while they lived in Germany. But in December 1799, they moved to Dove Cottage in Grasmere in the Lake District, and that was home for the rest of their lives, lives that consisted of reading, walking and gardening. And in 1802, when Wordsworth was 32, he married Mary Hutchinson, whom I've said he'd known since childhood, and she'd stayed with him and Dorothy many times over the years. But Mary knew before she married Wordsworth about Annette and Caroline in France, and the marriage was a very happy one, and to their five children, Dorothy was a second mother.
Good
a mother.
Yeah, and they didn't just have to survive on his income from poetry.
Hardly, Sean. I mean, he'd inherited some money, but he was also appointed revenue collector for Westmoreland, and that meant a steady income.
There were sadnesses?
Oh, there were. There were heartbreaking sorrows. In 1812, two of his children died. Catherine was 4, Thomas was 6. And adding to the pain, Wordsworth was in London when his daughter died and only heard the terrible news a week after her burial.
Good heavens. His travels took him to this country.
He came to Ireland. He climbed Carntool. I mean, he travelled really widely and well for a man of his time. And he didn't write anything about Ireland, but I think I'm so delighted that he climbed the highest mountain down in Kerry.
Absolutely. It's one I think you'd normally go to at this time of the year, but that's another story. You won't be doing it on this occasion. But the poem that made him famous throughout the world, The Daffodils, written in April 1804.
That's right. I mean, it's more about remembering the daffodils than anything else, and how memory can bring us great delight. And it's not on the Leaving Cert. But there you go, you know. I mean, not everything can be on the Leaving Cert. And in that particular poem, he really depends on Dorothy's journal, because Dorothy wrote about that moment 2 years earlier when she spoke about watching the daffodils at the side of the lake. And Wordsworth read that journal, and then he actually made it his own, and he took it and incorporated it into his own poem. But he also told a friend that the best two lines in the poem, they flash upon that inward eye, and
which is the
bliss of solitude, that they were written by Mary Hutchinson. So in a way, that poem, there were three people in that poetic relationship, Dorothy, William and Mary.
Yeah, and look, coming up to the present day, I know there's a particular poem. We had a poem by Derek Mahon, featured on Morning Ireland recently in the 9 o'clock news. To end though, you'd like to recite something from another contemporary Irish poet.
Yeah, I mean, David Hockney the other day said the source of art is love. And this is a recent poem by Eleni Cullinan. It's called Love. It's a perfect poem and is set in Clara, County Offaly. And it's really about what Wordsworth recalled, nameless unremembered acts of kindness and of love, parents waiting to collect their kids from the train. And here it is, Love. The view from the train is better than a dream. A man is gazing down the lines of beetroot. A lone tractor waits at the level crossing, one light glowing, although it's not quite dark. A doll has fallen into the gloom of the hedge, her frilly skirt still white. Walls come closer, lights on Clara Station cast their orange troll. Beyond its margin, the engines vibrate in the car park, harmonising the hum of love. A newspaper spread on a dashboard catches the last light from an office window. A parent's overcoated shape is reading, waiting for the noisy gang that clings by the doors with their luggage while the wheels are slowing and finally slide and stand.
Only you can read them like that. Niall McMonagall, thank you so much. And let's hope your students and all the students get a chance to use their great insights in the Leaving Cert. And let's hope it goes ahead in several weeks' time. And Niall McMonagall there, that's almost our lot for today. In news headlines, the Taoiseach has said the COVID-19 crisis has seen the biggest repatriation of Irish people in history, with 4,600 people returned home from across the world. And it's reported that the British Cabinet Minister Michael Gove is self isolating because a member of his family is displaying symptoms of coronavirus. That, as I say, is our lot for today. Thank you for listening. The programme produced by the series producer Tara Campbell, research Amy Ryan, broadcast coordinator Geraldine Collins on sound, Dave Gibson. Over now to Ronan.